Good afternoon. The Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection will come to order. It's Thursday, March 19th, 2009. And we're going to start with Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have two authors' amendment to put the bill into the shape I would like it. The A1, it's kind of just is better
the
language.
The A1 is a delete everything.
Delete everything.
And we'll let you do that. Here we were kind of waiting for a quorum, but you can discuss.
Okay, and let's have the A2 passed out as well.
Okay,
I think it's being passed out. Madam Chair and members, I'm sure that most of you have heard about the issue of human trafficking internationally, but people are usually surprised to hear that we actually have trafficking, sex and labor trafficking, in the state of Minnesota, and that the way the law is now. You don't have to cross borders, country borders or state borders, to engage in trafficking. The purpose of this legislation is to promote and advertise a tip line, a hotline, so that victims or others who suspect that someone may be engaging in human trafficking can call this line to report them. We have, with the A1 amendment, we're working with the Human Trafficking Task Force to develop the language and the size of the sign. They'll produce that electronically, which will then be made available so that we can increase community awareness and understanding of the crime of human trafficking and inform and assist trafficking victims of the possibility of rescue by calling this tip line.
And, Senator Pappas, we do have a quorum right now. So.
Okay, then I would move the A1 amendment. I can't move it. I'm
sorry. No, you're
request that someone on the committee
will move
that.
Will move that for you. Senator Spretner Solon moves the A1 author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails.
And, Madam Chair, the A2 amendment will narrow the requirement of posting the sign to only those establishments, those liquor licensing establishments, liquor licensees, that have been subject to complaints to local law enforcement for sex trafficking activity.
Senator Pretner Solon will offer that for you as well. Do members understand that? Senator Pappas has been, I mean, I know you've had conversations with people representing the establishments that would be required to post the notice. And I know there's been concern. This and the concern of our committee would have to do with those establishments and whether or not, you know, they are comfortable having the sign. This amendment narrows it so that, did you say that if the local licensing authority has
certified
that location's been subject to complaints to local law enforcement for sex trafficking activity. So
right.
It wouldn't be in every establishment, and there are many places where that is not a problem.
It's not appropriate. And, Madam Chair, we also, I've also discussed, and maybe Mr. Stang needs to add this language as well, that it would be prospective, so only after the enactment of the law would this go into effect.
So it's not for anything that's happened prior to the enactment of the law.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Stang.
We could accomplish that by, in line 5 of the A2 amendment, inserting after the effective date of this act.
I would move that.
Senator Pretner Solon then moves. We'll just incorporate that into the A2 amendment. She moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails.
And, Madam Chair, I have with me today is Linda Miller, who is the director of Civil Society, and Civil Society runs the current tip line. We do have money in the base for this tip line currently, which is ongoing money, and she's going to tell us a little bit about the, you know, the clients that they serve and the calls that they get on the tip line.
Okay, and Senator Pappas and Ms. Miller, We're on a really tight schedule because I think we have, 15 or so
bills.
To get done here in the next 2 hours. So if you could be really brief, but we certainly welcome you to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am Linda Miller from Civil Society. I have given you a packet that has a lot of information about the victims that we have gotten to rescue through the crisis and tip line, the human trafficking crisis and tip line, and the trafficking screening clinics. We are the NGO in the United States who have gotten them, who have rescued the most international human trafficking victims. We are also being featured by the United States Department of State in a United States Department of State television program that's being filmed April 8th and 9th. That is because this legislature has given us this money and has provided advertising like this of the line so that we get calls through the line and then we have services for the victims that bring them forward. Thank you.
And Chair, we do have a sample of current sign that they're using, but with this new regulation, the sign would be designed by the Human Trafficking Task Force, which is out of the Department of Public Safety.
So it sounds like you're doing wonderful, wonderful things, and I really applaud that. I think that's we should be very proud of that, and obviously you feel we can do more. Is there anybody, did you have anybody else to testify, Senator Pappas?
I did not.
Okay.
But there might be.
And Mr. Bagnoli, did you want to speak to this? And I don't know if you had seen the amendment prior to this, but Mr. Bagnoli,
Madam
welcome.
Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli at the Branche Law Firm on behalf of Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association. Senator Pappas and I have had a chance to speak this morning, and this amendment certainly goes a long way towards the concern was, I think, on our part, this prior to this amendment continues to extend to places like the Metrodome, the Xcel Energy Center, places where it's really unlikely that I'm very unfamiliar with this subject, so I don't know where the issues arise, but where it seemed to me very unlikely that these postings seem to be necessary. I think this goes a long way towards getting there. This is somewhat unfamiliar territory for us. We don't generally like to have postings warning people that illegal activity, warning people of illegal activity.
Mr. Bagnoli, the first time I walked into a restroom at a Marshall Fields and saw a warning, I thought, well, why did they do this? I was really I was almost offended by it, and then I calmed down and I understood it. But I know what you're saying.
I told a story to Senator Pappas, Madam Chair, earlier where I had, when I was at around 22, I had gone into a establishment in West Virginia, and being from the north here was, I didn't look out of the ordinary in West Virginia. There was a huge Confederate flag, which was sort of unusual for me to see, mostly men, and a big sign that said, no fighting. I think it said, no fighting, please. And that gave me an idea that maybe this wasn't the kind of place that I wanted to be in, and I left. And similarly, and I don't mean to equate this, and I certainly do not mean to in any way...
you're not trivializing it.
Thank you for the word. Trivializing what's going on here. But the concern is that if we start to go down this road where there are signs that are required, and the senator has... not unrightly looked at places that serve alcohol, both bars and all retail establishments, but as we discussed earlier, why shouldn't it be broader? I'm sure people that engage in this sort of thing go to 7-Elevens and Super Americas. I don't mean the folks here that are concerned about that, but that we're being isolated, and that somewhere down the line there will be signs requiring no drug dealing, no whatever the other things that, frankly, are illegal, like no fighting, which tend to give customers sort of an uneasy feeling in their stomachs and perhaps make it less hospitable, and we're in the hospitality industry.
Ms. Harrison reminds me that many dressing rooms in department stores have signs talking about shoplifting being a crime. Sometimes people just need a tap on the shoulder. And in this case, if somebody realizes there is a number they can call, that might be really helpful.
And it really is more for the tip line,
yes,
and the hotline,
right,
purposes.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Bagnoli, I appreciate your concerns, but what better place than in a public place to advertise to the public that this is a crime and attention should be paid to it. And the tip line is available.
Madam Chair, Senator Solon.
Mr. Bagnoli.
Although a bar or a liquor store is sort of a quasi-public place, it's nevertheless still a private establishment. So I think there's, I mean, frankly, there are probably police officers that could suggest light poles that would be more public and perhaps even get at the right people faster. But I don't.
Senator Chair, I'm thinking more of the Excel Center and the arenas.
So
hopefully, you know, they won't get cited, and so.
So, and Mr. Bagnoli, I think it's fair to say, I don't think you. I shouldn't probably characterize this. I don't know that you're entirely endorsing it, but you're saying this has gone a long way, and you'll be talking to your members, I'm sure. And this bill will go
judiciary.
To judiciary.
Is it going on?
Okay, so it goes. From here to there.
Madam
so.
Chair, I think your comments accurately reflect where we are right now.
Okay. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, how long does the sign have to stay posted?
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I guess in perpetuity.
Okay. Senator Olson, did you have?
Well, Madam Chair, I was only going to say that with the amendment, it seems to me a reasonable balance. And so another purpose is perhaps, I mean, that the main purpose is providing the notice, but perhaps a secondary purpose is discouraging businesses from being in a position where that notice could be posted on their business, mm-hmm. and that may not be a bad thing.
So, Senator Prettner-Solon, did you want
Madam Chair, I move the bill as amended, be recommended to pass, and I'm not sure where it goes.
We referred to the Judiciary Committee on Judiciary.
Okay.
Senator Prettner-Solon moves Senate File 1120 as amended, be recommended to pass, and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Is there anybody else that wanted to speak? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. I'm all out of whack here. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Pappas. And if you want, Senator Pappas, if you want to stick around and fight me or, you know, over carrying the omnibus liquor bill.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I thought I was a
we
good
miss you.
Liquor queen. And
I were. I know.
But you'll be an equally good liquor queen.
Oh, so. Thank you.
You got me
thank
in trouble.
You, Ms. Miller. Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. Thank you. And so now I'm going to ask Senator Sparks.
Sorry.
Hello, folder. Senator Sparks, do you want to come
in? Do you know when?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And members know that this, we always have a day where we hear all the members' various bills concerning liquor. And this is that day. And I have several bills. And it is the intention, as we have done in the past, to have an omnibus liquor bill so that instead of passing these bills immediately on, we'll just, I'm not sure Mr. Stang, is it just set it aside and then at the end of the hearing we'll, each bill will be voted on individually while the author's here to be included and then we'll vote on the final bill for passage. And so I would like to start with, I think, Senate File 1313, is that what you have me? I have those in a real particular order.
Yeah, and that will be the vehicle, Madam Chair, or Senator Scheid.
And Mr. Bagnoli is here as well. This is pretty straightforward. I don't know how many of you use a fabric bag to do your shopping. My family has started doing that, and instead of using paper and or plastic. There are many, many people who are doing that. If you observe them at Target or Cubs, the grocery store, whatever. And this says that people going into a liquor store would have purchased those as you do at virtually any other kind of store today. And we have to do this. You might wonder why we have to do this, because we limit what can be sold in an exclusive liquor store. And so it's pretty simple and straightforward, but Mr. Bagnoli would like to say a word or two.
Mr. Bagnoli, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, Joe Bagnoli, behalf of the MLBA and the Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association, it's exactly as Senator Scheid has said. There's been a somewhat growing demand and desire on the part of both private and municipal liquor stores to be able to make available sort of bags that say, trying to pick somebody's store, Northfield Liquor Store, proud supporters of the city of Northfield, and I don't think it's a large thing, but there's been certain inquiries by a few folks, and it's a way to react to consumers, and so we're doing that.
And Mr. Bagnoli, I know it says multiple use, but we kind of mean the kind that you can reuse, right? That can be reused.
Correct.
And you mean multiple uses, not just for carrying different kinds of things. I was just wondering if that might be a little ambiguous. But that's
Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, I hadn't thought about that.
I don't know.
Hard. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Scheid, why do we need legislation for this?
Pardon me?
Why do we need this legislation?
Senator Johnson, because if you look at current law, which is on the face of the bill, except as otherwise provided in the subdivision, an exclusive liquor store may sell only the following items. And then it lists 11 items today. We're adding a 12th. Among those are liqueur-filled candy, soft drinks. And we have to give them permission to sell ice legislatively. So the statute, we have quite a scheme and a system of regulating alcohol, and so this is what this means.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Scheid. Isn't the reason that this is in here because we don't allow selling liquor in grocery stores in Minnesota, and so we're trying to distinguish between what would be a grocery store and what would be a liquor store?
I don't know if that's why we
Senator
do this.
Scheid,
I think this happened before we ever considered selling wine in grocery stores, and we're not considering that today for anybody in here.
Mr. Bagnoli?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think that I'm not entirely sure of the history, but I think it's the idea so that perhaps they wouldn't sell hardware at a liquor store as well. Or, there's been in some places the idea of selling, need to have a little liquor store sold a lot of beer next to a lumber yard. The idea that a liquor store is a liquor store is a liquor store, and that as a state we're going to look at and regulate the liquor store and keep it sort of pure in what it sells. And so the things that you see that they sell generally are either mixes that go into the beverage or somehow very directly related to alcohol. So that's, I think, the history or of why it's like that. I don't know if it specifically relates to the wine and grocery store conversation.
Senator Johnson. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Scheid, I can't help myself. In some places in Wisconsin, you can.
You mean
mixed.
Oh, yes, in many states, Senator Johnson. But we're now this is, it did kind of, I guess it does open itself up to that discussion. But this is really to let grocery stores do this. I think it's environmentally a friendly thing to do. And it is also the vehicle for this omnibus bill, Senator Johnson.
Aye.
It might be. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to move the bill, but okay. Saw I don't need to because Senator Scheid is on our committee. So,
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that Senate File 1313 be recommended
Actually,
we're
going to lay this aside because this will be the vehicle.
Yeah, it'll be the, with the understanding it'll be the vehicle, so we'll lay it aside. But I think we can vote on whether or not we would include it.
Okay.
So I guess my motion should be that Senate File 1313 be included in the omnibus liquor.
Okay. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Shy.
Come on.
Senate File 31. And I think for saving time, I'm going to ask Mr. McGrath to go ahead and introduce himself and speak to you about why we want to do Senate File 31.
Welcome
to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Scheid and members. My name is Lee McGrath. I'm the Executive Director of the Institute for Justice. This bill is a cleanup bill and a First Amendment, dealing with a First Amendment issue. What the bill does is that it removes from state statute wording that a federal judge has declared as a violation of the First Amendment and a violation of commercial speech. So it removes from statute something that is not constitutional. I'd be happy to answer any questions about the wording of the statute, the wording of the bill.
And Mr. Chairman?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if Mr. McGrath, feel free to correct me, but I recall in this committee some years ago having the conversation about being able to receive shipments of wine. And I'm looking down the history of, this says 93, but I remember the discussion. I remember Senator Speer talking about this in the Commerce Committee 10 or 12 years ago. And so I think that we must have adopted the advertising at the same time we said that you could get up to 2 cases of wine. Is that?
Mr. McGrath?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scheid is correct. This happened subsequent to the initial shipping issue. I think it happened in 95 and 97, where prohibitions were put on advertising on commercial speech. Since that time, the United States Supreme Court had a case called 44 Liquor Mart. And those types of prohibitions on speech regarding truthful products that were illegal products that were truthfully advertised have been declared unconstitutional, and so has this couple of sentences in this section dealing with advertising.
And members,
sorry,
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I think the members have a copy of the consent judgment in there. In their packet, am I correct? It's from 2006. So I'm not sure if you have that, but yes, you do. And with that, Mr. Chairman, you might ask if there's anybody to testify on it. But
would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 31? Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Scheid moves that Senate File 31 be included in the Omnibus Liquor Bill, Senate File 1313. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 1485. And I have an amendment, an A1 amendment. Okay. I'd like to do that to put it in the context of the conversation we're going to have about it.
Senator Scheid would
There's
move
amendment.
The author's A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Scheid.
And, Mr. Chairman, I have sitting next to me Pete Rafakis, who is, and you have to give me the Craft Brewers
Minnesota
Guild.
Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild.
He's president of that. I'll let you introduce yourself and then talk about why we should be moving in this direction.
Mr. Rafakis, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Like Senator Scheid said, my name is Pete Rafakis. I'm the president of the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild, as well as the owner of Minneapolis Town Hall Brewery. For the course of many discussions with many people in the beer industry, and as being an owner of a brew pub or a brewery in the state of Minnesota, I think there's a lot of markets that are unavailable to brewers and brew pubs, breweries in this state. And the way the law is stated currently, it doesn't allow manufacturers of beer to promote their products, and it excludes them from certain markets. As a brew pub, our beer is in great demand, and we are unable to distribute the beer throughout the state of Minnesota and other states. Consequently, we compete against brewers from other states that are allowed to enter our market, and they're set up in the exact same fashion that we are.
And so,
Senator Shy.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like Mr. Rafakis to tell us a bit about how this has grown. One of the businesses in the district I represent is a microbrewery.
Yes.
A microbrewery, Surly's. And Omar couldn't be here today to... The owner couldn't be here to talk to you about what has happened with his business. I don't know if Senator Pappas carried the first microbrewery and brew pub legislation, but I know she carried some a few years ago. And I think that it was carefully worked out with the rest of the industry. But in a time when we're concerned about growing jobs, and particularly here in Minnesota, this is an industry that has really taken off, and
sure,
it's kind of bumped into a ceiling, and our law won't allow them to grow. So if you could talk just about,
sure,
who you employ and that kind of thing, just real briefly.
Okay. Stuart Fakus.
Mr. Chairman, the brewery laws in the state of Minnesota, they kind of categorize breweries into two pieces, either a microbrewery or a brew pub. Microbreweries aren't able to sell on-premise. For example, we're a brew pub, and we can sell on-premise, but we're not allowed to distribute beer. So you can be one or the other. In other states, for example, Colorado, you can be both. You can start out as a brew pub and sell beer on-premise, and if your product is demanded, you can start distributing your product. In addition, if you grow to a certain size and past your capacity in your brew pub, you can open a production facility and also distribute more product. In the state of Minnesota, I can speak to Town Hall best, but we have grown to a size where we can't sell all the product that we demand through our one restaurant. And we'd like the ability to grow. And at this point, the law doesn't allow us to. I think the way that the bill has been amended would allow brew pubs to enter the three-tier distribution system in Minnesota and distribute their beer through that system. Conversely, microbreweries aren't allowed to sell on-premise. There's a lot of products that are distributed into the state of Minnesota from other states that allow microbreweries to sell their product on-site. For example, New Belgian's a popular product that just entered Minnesota right now. And their product, if you go down to New Belgian in Fort Collins, Colorado, you can go on-site, take a tour, and then purchase any type of product that they make on-site. Here, breweries can give beer away as samples, but they're not allowed to sell their product on-site.
Can you just talk about how this is so popular around the country?
Sure.
The craft breweries.
The craft beer industry has exploded, and you see it here in Minnesota with the opening of new beer bars, bars that concentrate on craft beer. And they could be craft beer from other countries. It could be craft beer from other states. It could be craft beer from the state of Minnesota. The growth in the beer market is craft beer, and we're seeing other beers level off. I like to call them industrial style beers, but the majority of the growth is in the craft beer market. And in Minnesota, the market is growing from out-of-state breweries. Some of the breweries that have been established is like Summit here and Shells, and others are doing quite well. They're able to distribute their beer. Surly Brewing Company just came along a couple years ago and has exploded. And the brew pub section of that market isn't allowed to grow because they're not allowed to distribute their beer.
So,
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, this is not without controversy. And so I intend to withdraw the bill. I want the members, you don't feel it was wasting your time. It's an issue about jobs, and it's about Minnesota businesses and being able to grow. And I'm not going to pretend that this amended language is the perfect way to achieve that, but it's a place to start. And so I'm going to withdraw the bill, but I'd like members to keep in mind that they'll see something along this line next year.
Senator Vanderveer.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, these are difficult times, and if there's a way to move this along, I think it would be a good idea. So thank you for doing it.
Thank you.
Chances, but...
Well, and Senator Vanderveer, and maybe you can work with me and, you know, as well as others and try to work this out so we can do something next year. And I know there were other people that wanted to testify. I don't think they need to unless they have an idea of how we can move this forward. I mean, just being opposed to it because we don't want to change the way things are, I think if the craft breweries are willing to go through the three-tier system and be part of it, we need to find a way to make that work, I think, so.
Right. Okay.
So.
Let's keep moving. We have 14 bills, and I think that those people will continue to talk with Senator Scheid. Senator Scheid, are you going to present Senator Pogemiller is unable to be here today?
Mr. Senate Chairman, I am.
Okay. That is Senate File 283, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Beninoff is here to help me with that. This bill would allow Augsburg College, which must be in Senator Pogemiller's district, would allow Augsburg to apply for a beer and wine license from the city of Minneapolis. And the city of Minneapolis would go through its normal procedures for granting a liquor license, and they even would have public hearings. This is for beer and wine only. They have served it in the past, but maybe I'll let Mr. Beninoff tell you what has happened here.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jay Beninoff, Director of Government Affairs at Augsburg College. Brief background, Augsburg had been serving beer and wine for years, in fact, as long as anyone can ever remember. And sort of accidentally, they called the city of Minneapolis to check on their conditions, and they were told, you don't have a license and you can't serve beer and wine. So they immediately stopped. In order for Augsburg to obtain a beer and wine license, they have to have a restaurant that is eligible to receive one, which they don't. So simply, this bill allows the city of Minneapolis to grant the license, as it does in some other situations, which I think you have before you, to allow Augsburg to serve, not to sell, but to serve beer and wine at faculty events, alumni dinners, those kinds of things. Really to do the thing it's been doing probably, I don't know, it's been in Minneapolis since 1872, probably since 1872. No one's been around quite that long.
There were probably a few years where they didn't do it.
Perhaps. Yeah. perhaps, but...
Well, on the other hand.
We can't find anyone that can remember that, though. That simply does, and it allows the city of Minneapolis to put conditions, go through public hearings, et cetera. Return to the status quo. Legally this time.
Yes,
legally.
Right. Legally. And, Mr. Chairman, we have done this for multiple educational institutions over the years.
Would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 283? Seeing none, Senator Scheid moves that Senate File 283 be included in the omnibus liquor bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator
again.
Scheid.
And is Senator Bach...
Yep. Senator Saxog was next on the list.
Well, there we go. Right. I'm going to get this straight yet.
Senator Bach said
Saxog. I know. Saxog. No, you're my senator.
Senator Saxog, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have Senate File 219, and that's It's a proposal that says the city may grant a liquor license to a convention center. It's for a small convention center in Aiken, Minnesota. It used to be part of the 40 Club. What happened is that it was one complex, and then the 40 Club sold that particular portion of a motel to a different owner. So House File 97 is the companion that Representative Solberg introduced, and it was laid over for possible inclusion in the House Omnibus Liquor Bill. We've heard no opposition to the bill, and I appreciate members' support.
Any Senator Vandiver, you just sound like a real veteran of this committee. I just want you to know. Is there anybody in the audience who wanted to speak to Senator Saxhog's bill? Senator Saxhog, we certainly have done this on numerous occasions. Senator Sparks, I think.
I would move that Senate File 219 be included in the Omnibus Liquor Bill.
On Senator Sparks' motion to include this in the Omnibus Bill, discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Senator Saxhog.
Members.
It's an interesting committee meeting. You might want to stick around.
I'm in the one on the other side.
Oh, okay. So. Well, thanks for being patient.
I'm on the other side, all right.
Careful.
Okay. Senator Prettner-Solin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that Senate File 195 be recommended.
Yes, Senator Solin.
Madam Chair and committee members, Senate File 195 would authorize the sale of liquor at the new Duluth Entertainment Convention Center Arena during intercollegiate hockey games. This provision closely parallels a provision which was approved for the University of Minnesota Gopher Football Stadium. The DEC and the University of Minnesota Duluth will have an agreement regarding limitations on the sale of liquor during hockey games, and Dan Russell, the executive director of the DEC, can give you a bit more information about that agreement.
Yes, welcome.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Dan Russell, Executive Director, Duluth Entertainment Convention Center. Very quickly, I'd like to thank you for your support of our new arena last year. It's well underway. We've awarded $24 million in bids, just a small percentage, and all the bids have gone to 11 Minnesota construction companies, 8 from northeastern Minnesota.
And so pretty soon they'll be getting to work then.
Well, we'll have 300 tradespeople on the job within a few weeks, so thank you. This is really a follow-up to that project. This is at the request of the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center Authority, which is a state authority. When we were set up in 1963, long before we had ever heard of suites or a club room, legislation and our enabling legislation stated that we couldn't serve alcohol at intercollegiate hockey games. So this is a bill that would change that. We have a 25-year agreement with the University of Minnesota that the regents have approved, and that will cover where and when at university events alcohol can be sold. We really defer to them. They are a partner in this project. They are contributing over $16 million over the debt service for the bonds for the facility. So basically, this bill would change the law to allow us to serve that, but we would defer to our partners, the University of Minnesota, and I guess more importantly, the University of Minnesota Duluth, on what their wishes are on where the alcohol would be sold in the new facility.
So, Mr. Russell, will the DEC, are they able right now to sell alcoholic beverages on the premises?
Madam Chair, the DEC is a major part of our business is the convention center business, and so that's a big part of what we do, and we do in excess of $1 million a year in alcohol sales. But currently in the building where the Bulldogs play, alcohol is not sold.
So, does anybody have any questions, first of all? Is there anybody in the audience that wanted to speak to this? So it's our understanding that this is, it almost looks like, I don't know, I guess you have to say University of Minnesota Duluth, But we understand that you will be working with the Board of Regents to come up with the policy, am I right, about where the beer will be served. It's not going to be available to every to all the students sitting in the stands. It will be in suites or boxes, am I correct?
Madam Chair, you are correct, and that agreement is already in place. It was part of our partnership to put together the local match to the state grant last year. So that is clearly written. In fact, in our 25-year agreement, it says alcohol with the University of Minnesota, alcoholic beverages may be sold in the new arena during university events only in suites and club rooms. I think every campus has kind of a different look on how to handle that issue, and that was their explicit desire and wish.
Okay. Mr. Russell, thank you. Is there anybody in the audience again that would like to speak to this? Then I think I caught Senator Pretner Solon saying right on early there that she would like Senate File Number 195 to be included in the omnibus liquor bill. Questions from the committee? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. Mr. Russell, thank you. I assume you came down from Duluth. And
with my better half there. So.
Well, hopefully you can. And we're having spring here, kind of. So
we still have a lot of snow.
So.
A lot.
Thank you very much.
Sure, I have a question.
Senator Scogin.
Mr. Russell, just for the Bulldogs play at the arena, but the university doesn't own any of that, do they?
Mr. Russell.
Yes. Madam Chair and the committee members, you're correct. This is the Duluth State's Convention Center Authority is a state authority with 7 appointees to the board by the mayor of Duluth and 4 by the governor. So we are a separate entity, and they pay rent to play at our facility.
Thank you.
Thank you again, thank you. Mr. Russell. Senator Latz, I don't see Senator Bach or Senator Tomassoni, so come on up.
Thank you. You're not serving.
No. We talked about you the other day, though, Senator Latz, because we were talking about the database bill. So I just, it's like you were here, but I realized, no, you weren't. We were just talking about you. So you have Senate File 239.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 239 is relating to the sale of certain products at liquor stores. Currently, liquor stores are restricted in the kind of products, in addition to liquor, that they can sell. But they can sell some products besides liquor. And
Senator Latz, we had this conversation a few moments ago because I've included now in the vehicle bill, actually, for this, that they may sell a mixed-use or reusable bag for people to carry products, since people are not wanting to use the paper and plastic anymore. So this would be right in the same list, members. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, Madam Chair, I think that's a brilliant idea, and we would like to apply the same principle to this bill.
Senator Latz is very sharp.
Madam Chair, I have with me Bob Schmidt, the owner of a company called Just In Case Products Incorporated, who would like to present to you the product that he thinks would be appropriate to allow for sale in liquor stores.
Mr. Schmidt, welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairwoman, and the members of the committee. As Senator Latz mentioned, I'm the owner. Started a company called Just In Case Products. This is an invention that I came up with also after numerous searches. So it's a product that doesn't exist. So I've actually had this submitted for patent as of October of 2007. The focus of the product is to restrict access to alcohol in the home, specifically for the preteens and the teens, basically that are in many cases actually stealing the alcohol from the home. And many studies show that from the early ages, that's where a lot of their alcohol comes from.
You're saying from home, from their own home?
Their own home, correct. And it could be the children or the kids of the parents, but it also, in many cases, are the friends that are over there at their house. It basically, oftentimes, it's basically a result of peer pressure that occurs. So this basically is a tool to be able to provide parents peace of mind and to restrict access in the home. I've been to numerous liquor stores. I'm the one who goes into liquor stores with my measuring tape. And everybody gives me a really weird look as to why are you here with a tape measure. And what I'm doing is I'm measuring the height between the shelves for the biggest types of liquor cases and bottles and things of that nature that actually reside in the liquor stores. But what that's done is also foster a lot of conversations with the clerks as well as the store managers at the liquor stores as I'm doing my research for my product. And it's interesting some of the feedback that I've gotten from them. Situations such as, I just had a husband and wife come in or parents come in and actually brought in a bottle of their liquor from home. And they thought it looked a little bit light in color. And they wanted to do is they wanted to compare it to the liquor that was on a shelf. And sure enough, it was very obvious it had been watered down. So in numerous situations, parents have actually purchased alcohol for a party at home, and then in many cases had excess, and they're going, what do we do with it now? We don't want to have this in the house. So in many cases, they don't really have a good reason or a good outlet to be able to retain it or to store it securely. So so basically the product was brought forward. I met with numerous of the alcohol organizations within the cities, within Edina, within Minnetonka. And approximately a year ago, we were ready to go with the owner of MGM through a kind of an education as well as a sales opportunity with MGM, Mike Maglich, the owner, saying, I don't even want anything, any profit, we'll just run it through the till. Prior to that actually occurring, he found out, no, we couldn't do it because it didn't fall within the guidelines. I met with Marlene Kelsberg from AGE, and Marlene said, we support what you're doing, but we can't stretch what exists with regards to the state statute. So what she suggested is to go through this process and actually have the state statute amended so that the containers, the safe cases, as I call them, could actually be sold in liquor stores at point of sale. There's a three-digit combination that resides. This is made out of Lexan, which is basically polycarbonate. GE's name is Lexan. It's basically a virtually unbreakable plastic. And part of this is a deterrent, so that when the peer pressure comes from the preteens or teens to say, oh, just take two or three beers, mom and dad won't know about it, or just take a little bit of the booze and throw it in a container. Basically, this gives them an out saying with their peer pressure when it occurs, because it's almost inevitable it's going to occur, says, I can't get to it. It's secured in the home. It's locked. And my vision is also at some point, just as you have security on the homes, where you have ADT or Honeywell or whatever one you pull up to discourage the thieves from actually breaking into your home, is to actually, as a parent, dropping off your preteens and teens at parties at other parents' house, is to actually see a sticker also that says, just in case, on the door, which says, we take this seriously in our home, and we protect our alcohol. Thank you.
Mr. Schmidt, thank you. That's really interesting. It's very attractive, and you would sell... I mean, what?
I have
both things, either for cans of beer or.
Yep, I have them for cans, bottles. I've had customers and the president of the PTA at Minnetonka ask if I could do it for wine bottles. So I have this for wine, beer, and liquor, basically. From that, there's been spinoffs that have for cigarettes in the home, for prescription medicines and painkillers and things too.
Wow.
But specifically, today, it's really focused on bringing the concept and putting in front of the parents as they come in to purchase the alcohol and saying, oh, why not? For the cost, not too much more than the cost of a case of beer, they could actually have it secured in the home. It's got a three-digit combination lock that they can set. So it's not like a school locker combination that you're saying, here's memorize these three numbers. You can set it, reset it, change it whenever you want to. So 1,000 different combinations also. But it's really a deterrent. If somebody wants to get into it, they could take a sledgehammer, but then they've been caught, ultimately.
No. Right. And it probably attracts fingerprints as well. So, interesting. Can you tell me, I mean, like, how much does the bottles go for?
This is a medium liquor case, so I make them in all different sizes and shapes. I've had to do all the specifications for the typical shelving or shelves basically behind in the home, in the kitchens and things. This is approximately $60, and this is approximately $35. So I'm trying to keep the pricing very fair and reasonable for the average consumer. So it's not I can't do it now. It's to make it an easy decision to make. So when a case of beer is roughly in the neighborhood of $20, to protect it for another 35. Sure. I've had some of the clerks also say I could see parents and customers bringing their empty case in and filling it up and taking it and carrying it. Because I also route it so that the handles of the actual cases, the 12 packs, the bottles, all of them actually secure and fit right into the current packaging that the manufacturers use as well. So,
Mr. Schmidt, do you live in the district that Senator Latz represents?
I live in the Excelsior. No, I do not.
Oh, okay. I just he has some creative folks that he's brought to us anyway. You know, we had the pedal pub last year, and this is it. Interesting. I mean, I'm really impressed that
it's been. This was all triggered. If I could just add one piece of information, how this all triggered. I have a 20-plus year experience in the office equipment industry. Little history as a friend of the family. I have two daughters, two teenage daughters. One just turned 20 in January. We had a neighbor daughter that was right between them. Basically, a third daughter per se. She got in trouble after they had moved and got into the booze before school. Jumped on the bus. She is maybe 100 pounds and fell flat out of her chair in her first hour class. And almost to the point of alcohol poisoning, they were iffy whether or not they'd have to rush her to the hospital. But what it triggered in my mind, and I couldn't get rid of it, is it could have been me. Because I have a case of beer in my refrigerator in my garage. I couldn't tell you if I got 15, 12, 8. Sure. Most people don't monitor it that closely. And part of it is some use of this may be also taking the cans out and discarding the actual cardboard case so you can actually see the cases as well. But that's what triggered it. So this has been a five-year journey for me to bring it to a product that actually has the qualities that are needed and fits in a refrigerator or within a cabinet, that kind of thing.
So is there anybody else that would like to testify regarding this product? Mr. Stang has a suggestion here, if we might.
Madam Chairman, Senator Latz may want to consider an immediate effective date on this bill. I don't see any reason why not. So these could be sold immediately and after enactment. And I would suggest the same for your multiple use.
Okay.
So.
I mean, Mr. Stang, thank you.
Madam Chair, I would request that.
Okay. Senator Scogin, did you have
thank
a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was curious if anyone else makes them, or are we creating statute for one?
Well, actually, anybody else could, okay. Senator Scogin. We're not naming anything. We're just any device that could ensure safe storage. I think Mr. Schmidt has a really great idea.
Is anyone else, Mr. Schmidt, making them, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge. That's why I have the patent in for submission, basically, as of October. I searched for 2 years and couldn't find anything that actually performed this function, but I'm sure there'll be others that'll come forward, I guess, basically.
Wow. So, Senator Scogin, or?
Yeah, we'll move.
You want to move?
With an immediate effect.
Move Senate file 239.
With an immediate effective date.
With an immediate effective
and be
date.
Set aside and put into.
1313.
Into the omnibus bill, if that's acceptable to you, Senator Latz.
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
Mr. Schmidt, I think we like.
Great.
Good for you.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Bach, I know I had Senator Tomassoni earlier. Is one of you?
He's still there.
I thought yours would be really quick. Mr. Schmidt, thank you for bringing all that in and sharing that with us.
Sure, I'm wondering if
Senator Bach.
I wonder if the box is coming any larger size. They're not going to be very marketable on the Iron Ranger.
Mr. Schmidt, you'll need wheels.
There is a large.
A steering device.
Yeah. Is there an extra large?
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I've got. I mean, this is an important bill to the owners of this lodging establishment in International Falls, or in Grand Marais. I'm sorry,
yes.
But it is one of the bills from time to time we get to carry for somebody in our district. That's kind of a lot of fun. You know, we've all stayed at motels where we've had an opportunity to have a continental breakfast. But imagine the opportunity of being able to stay at one where you get an opportunity to have a wine bar with some cheese and crackers and kind of a evening-type continental breakfast. I have with me the owners of the Best Western in Grand Marais. They have also a facility in Detroit Lakes. And a number of years ago, Senator Langseth passed this same language into law, so they're able to do this. So this is actually operating. This same program is operating in Detroit Lakes today at a different Best Western that they own. We'd like to have the opportunity to do the same thing in Grand Marais. The City Council has supported the request. And nobody can explain this better than the owners.
So, welcome to our committee.
Thank you very much for having us, Madam Chair and members. My name is Chris Holland Melhoff, and my husband Scott is with us today. I'm going to defer to him to give a very brief background so you understand what we're asking for, and either of us are welcome to your questions.
Mr. Melhoff?
Yes, Madam Welcome. Chair. We are a third-generation family business in Minnesota. And in 2005, we approached the legislature for pretty much the exact same legislation for our new hotel that we were building, the Lodge in Lake Detroit, which is a lifestyle hotel with a full-service day spa in Detroit Lakes. We are trying to evolve our property in Grand Marais to a similar type of business. We have grown the hotel in Grand Marais from 20 units to now 66 units, fully renovated it, and in the process over the years, since we've been there for 25 years, as you are all aware, Continental Breakfast has certainly changed. Our space there is very limited. We are not able to do what we'd like to do. So in this process, we'd be adding a large lobby project, well over $1 million, to accommodate this type of thing. At our lodge, we have a bar that it's a designated area, so we do not serve over the front desk or anything like that. It's a professional operation, and we, of course, have to abide by all the laws that everybody else does with liquor liability license and that or insurance, that sort of thing. So we would like to do the same type of thing in Grand Marais. We did receive letters of support from several restaurants in Detroit Lakes, as well as the police department, that there has not been any problems as of today in 2.5 years of operation.
So, thank you. Senator Bach, I see it. There are two locations in the language. Are they? There's the.
We have, I can help with that as well.
Yes, Ms. Bach.
Initially, it was our bill, and also it was suggested that we ask any other lodging establishments that have 10 or more sleeping rooms and can accommodate 30 more people in their public space, which is a current is a requirement of the current state statute. And we did so, and there was one other property that stepped forward that would like to have the ability to have a liquor license granted in the future if they choose to do so. And that property is East Bay Suites with Teresa Stearns. So
it's not your property, though.
That one is not our property. Okay. Yeah, right.
Madam Chair, the point of that was once this passes into law, it certainly will be popular in the community. And so Representative Dill and I thought that, you know, there's a number of lodging establishments in Grand Marais that this would extend that opportunity to them on the front end.
Right.
So that this summer, once this is up and running, we don't get a bunch of requests. How come you did this for the Best Western and the opportunity wasn't made available to us?
Right.
So sounds like it. That's good politics too. So.
And just to be clear, and the language is pretty specific, but it's not open to the public. It's for the guests of the hotel and their invitees. It's not a public bar. The exception to that is where there are special events held that are advertised, like a convention type business or something like that. It's not a bar that would be open to the public.
Is there anybody here who would like to testify concerning this bill? Oh, Senator Johnson has a question. If anybody would like to, feel free to come up to the table. But Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, is this a full liquor license?
Senator Bach?
Yes, it can be if the city of Grand Marais so wishes to authorize us a full liquor license.
And
Senator Johnson?
Madam Chair, does your city council have a limitation on the number of liquor licenses they can offer?
Senator Bach?
Answer to that.
We still
yeah,
Mr. Sting.
Madam Chair, there are
there are limits in statute for cities in terms of the number they can issue.
So, Madam Chair.
So, Senator Johnson.
And Council, this goes around that number.
Madam Chair, I don't read it to do that.
Okay. How do you interpret this?
I don't see anything in here that notwithstands their limit in statute.
So, Senator Johnson, it looks like it would have to fit within. Is that what you're thinking, Senator Bach?
That's our intent.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Milhoff. It's
the current statute is where the limitation results, and it might be something to look at in the future. Currently, as a definition of a hotel, is that half of your sales have to be in food. So if the city, and Detroit Lakes as well, wanted to follow the statute to the letter of the law and wanted to have the appropriate legislation that would allow them to grant this. It's not above the number of licenses that they are allowed to grant.
And Senator Bach, would you like an immediate effective date as well? We're kind of offering that. It's a special today.
When are we going to open?
Well, for us, it would involve an addition, so it would probably be approximately a year from now.
It doesn't matter.
So August 1st is probably fine.
Then it's fine.
We'll be building the space for this to occur if you would wish us this.
We can start construction after season.
Yes.
So, no amendments. So, Senator Marty moves that Senate File 1160 be recommended to be included in the omnibus liquor bill. That's fine with you, Senator Bach?
And I'm sure seems like I've had something in there almost every year.
I wasn't going to say anything. No,
I don't know if the committee members, but last year we had the growler issue here, and I had a bed and breakfast that wanted to be able to brew and serve on their own premise. I haven't been there to see how it worked out yet. But
well, this sounds
also on the North Shore.
So, any more discussion? I didn't see anybody coming forward to testify on it. So all those in favor of the Marty motion, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. Mr. and Mrs. Milhoff, thank you. Senator Bach. And Senator Thomaso.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Senator Tomasoni, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Senate File 1506, Madam Chair, is...
Yes.
Senate File 1506, Madam Chair, is a bill that allows sale of alcoholic beverages in the football stadium or arena that the Board of Regents determine, and basically says that if you sell them anywhere, you have to sell them everywhere. And it's in response to a decision by the board to sell the alcohol only in the boxes and not to the poor people who sit in the regular seats. And so, Madam Chair, this just says that it should be sold everywhere. When we put this authorization together, in fact, it was in the conference committee when we were talking about building the stadium, the intent was that if you were going to sell alcohol in the stadium, that would be available to everybody. And so this just... clarifies the intent of what happened in the conference committee. And I have an interesting email that I received from a person who lived nearby. And she said, I'm a resident life director of Dinkaken Properties in Stadium.
Dinkatown, probably.
It says Dinkaken Properties in, I can say Italian words, but these other words I can. Dinkaken Properties in Stadium Villages, which houses one of the largest concentrations of students adjacent to the stadium. Additionally, I am the president of the Stadium Village Commercial Association. Based on my over 20 years of experience on 5 campuses in 3 states, you are right on the money to make the alcohol available throughout the stadium. Having it segregated by wealth is like a caste system. My biggest concern is binge drinking pre-game because students and other cheap seat fans are not able to buy one or two drinks during the game. And so this, I don't know if I should say her name or not, but at any rate...
You don't have to.
At any rate, that's kind of what the bill's getting at here, Madam Chair, is that if they're going to allow for alcohol, then it should be throughout the stadium. And I know right now that at U of M football games at the Metrodome, everybody can buy a beer, and they have a they have actually a pretty neat rule there where you can only buy one at a time, so one person can buy one. And so they actually have a control on it. So I think this could be done in the stadium that they're building now also.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Thomas Soney, now, it's my understanding that the University of Minnesota could allow, under current statute, stadium seating to sell liquor. Why is it better that the legislature is making that decision and not the University of Minnesota making that decision?
Senator Thomas Soney.
Madam Chair and Senator Dahl, the Board of Regents decided to allow it only in the boxes where the rich people sit, and said the rest of the people who come to the game aren't going to be allowed. And so this just says that if they're going to allow it, then they have to allow it for everybody. And I think they could make a policy like they have at the Dome right now where you can only buy one at a time, and I think that would make a lot of sense. And I think this person that sent the email is absolutely correct in saying that you'll keep people from binge drinking before the game.
Senator Skogin.
Madam Chair, thank you. Senator Thomas Soney, at the stadium, do they have vendors walking, or do you have to go out to get your beverage?
Senator Thomas Soney.
At the Dome, I believe they have both. They have both. Yeah. Both.
Even during the college game?
Yeah, okay. I know they. I might be confusing college and pro now, but I'm pretty sure they have vendors all through it. I know they definitely have vendors for certain things, and I'm pretty sure beer is also included.
Okay, I've been to both. I can't.
Season ticket holder, they know both.
Okay, so Mr. Stang is a season ticket holder, and he says both, so
okay.
He would know. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I heard you mention the Board of Regents, Senator Thomas Soney, but who's sponsoring this for you? Who's the sponsor behind this idea?
I'm the sponsor.
Senator Thomas.
That's how this works, Senator Johnson. That's why they give you the certificate, you know, when it comes here.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
I don't know, Senator Johnson, if you've seen, I've seen articles in the newspaper, letters to the editor concerning this, and some people thinking it's a dual standard. And I think that's where Senator Thomas Soney, I think that was a point you were making earlier. I mean, I have mixed feelings about it. I'm kind of torn about it, but I think we ought to, you know, have the conversation. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But when Senator Pretner Solon represented her bill earlier for the Duluth Area Convention Center, the Board of Regents still had strict rules about where the liquor could be served and what type of games and all of that. And it sounds like now Senator Thomas Soney just wants to break all the rules.
Madam Chair, let me explain it to you again, Senator Johnson. When we pass a law, you're not breaking the rules, you're adhering to the law. Okay? So that's what we do here. And this is not breaking any rules. This, as I explained earlier, when we originally gave the Board of Regents the ability to do this, I was on the conference committee for the stadium conference committee, and the intent was if the Board of Regents decides to sell alcohol at the stadium, then it was would sell to everybody, not just the people who live in the boxes.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Thomas Soney. It looks to me from reading your bill, and I think this was the point you were making with the talking about selling one at a time, that it still leaves to the regents the decision about the specifics regarding how they'd want to carry this out. And so it's the only thing that we would be making law is that they can't only sell to some people within the stadium unless they sell to others, but the manner of how they choose to do that, where they want to make the sales, how much they sell, all of that would still be within their discretion.
Yeah, that's correct, Senator Johnson, or Senator Olson.
I think that says it pretty clearly. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair. Senator Thomas Soney and I like to have a beer as much as the next person sitting in the stadium. And I also have concerns, though, about the neighborhood people maybe you didn't hear from who now get to deal with 3 hours of drinking, besides the binge drinking that will go on before and after, but now they get another 3 hours to drink as well. I think there could be some neighborhood concerns in that regard as well.
Well,
Senator Thomas Soney.
Madam Chair and Senator Dahl, I don't know, but I know that the Metrodome is exactly the same distance from the middle of the campus as the new stadium is, and the rules in the Metrodome were such that you could only buy one drink at a time during any University of Minnesota-sponsored events, and so I would say that if we haven't heard from the neighborhood people in that regard, we probably won't hear in this regard either.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and one last question. I think the U would then be still the only university in the Big 10 that does allow drinking in the stadium during game time.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Tomasoni.
Senator Dahl, they do it now, and so I don't see any reason why they should have to change that.
Is there anybody from the university that would like to testify? Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Kathy Brown, and Vice President and Chief of Staff of the University of Minnesota.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I've been involved in the stadium project since its inception and have been very actively engaged in all aspects of it. And I certainly would want to thank the legislature for your support of the stadium project. If you've been over that way, you'll see what a beautiful facility it is and how excited we are on our campus about it. So we really appreciate the support we've had the legislature. I couldn't agree more that this is a decision that is best left to the Board of Regents. And as we heard in earlier testimony today, that the Board of Regents have been very consistent in their direction that the sale of alcohol is best limited to suites and premium seating. And the reason we've decided, or the Regents have decided to go this way, is those are areas which are not primarily open to students, and they are areas where people often buy for entertaining, business purposes, and so there is some social expectation around those premium seating areas. But we are trying to create a collegiate atmosphere, not a pro sports atmosphere. And that's different than what we have at the Metrodome. And one of the reasons we were very eager to move away from the Metrodome was to get to that collegiate atmosphere. Colleges around the country are almost uniform that they do not sell alcohol in their public spaces. They do have, I'd say, probably about half or a little bit more, and it's moving more in that direction for financial reasons, obviously, is to sell it in the premium seating and the suites. So our position's very consistent with what universities across the country are doing. And I appreciate the comment about the neighborhoods as well. We have been very conscious about working with the neighborhoods. This is bringing football back on campus, again, moving away from that pro sports atmosphere, creating the collegiate experience. And we really want to do that in the context of our neighborhoods, where they are a part of it, they enjoy it, and that we are respectful that this is where they live and have their homes. So we've tried to create an atmosphere through rules and policies that will allow a enjoyable, respectful, collegiate experience and have alcohol available in limited areas for tailgating, limited areas within the stadium, and create an atmosphere that's going to be conducive to a good time for everyone, families and students and friends and of the university.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Brown. Senator Tomasoni.
Let's not forget that when the university moved to the Metrodome in the first place, it was because they wanted to get into the pro sport stadium. And they actually were the ones who were one of the motivating factors for moving to the Metrodome when they knocked down Memorial Stadium, which was on campus. So we've come full circle here. But quite frankly, back in those days, you could buy as many beers as you wanted to when they first went into those games. And it's just up until recently that they've limited it to one beer per person. So I think that this is just a fairness thing, and that if they're going to allow alcohol in the football stadium, then they should be able to sell it to everybody.
Ms. Brown, I have two questions. One is, what's been the situation with the Metrodome? Have there been problems associated with students' access?
Well, one of the certainly at the Metrodome, anyone can obtain the alcohol if they're of age. And we have consistently tried to address underage drinking and excessive drinking on our campus, and we have a number of educational programs. We think this is just one more step in support of those efforts. I think the atmosphere at the Metrodome, I certainly have seen many individuals who had too much to drink, and I've seen students who haven't had anything to drink. So I think that's probably a mixed bag. I don't know that that is the absolute answer one way or the other, but I think as an educational institution, the more we move in a direction which is supportive of managing drinking and limiting access for students because we may have many underage students on campus, that that's a smart thing to do.
And Ms. Brown, I just wondered, there aren't bars or restaurants serving alcohol. I mean, are they're right around there. I don't know that they're like on campus property, probably not, but
no.
But
no.
They're kind of surrounded by the campus, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The restaurants and businesses are in the Stadium Village, the Dinkingtown area. Those are not on university property. And we have in lease space in our student union to an entity called the Campus Club, and that's the only entity on our campus that actually serves alcohol. It's a separate business from the university.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would just have to say that from the way I'm looking at this, I would see this as a fairness thing, too, because I'm especially sensitive to situations where we have tax dollars paying for whether it's university property or whether they're going towards supporting a stadium, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And then we have different rules for people who are perhaps low income, whether they're students or younger or people who can afford to pay more. I mean, you mentioned that people who are there buying premium seats or in the
suites,
sorry, I mean, are there for a social purpose. And I guess I would have to say I think everyone's there for a social purpose. It's just a question of what level of social purpose you can afford. So, you know, if you were saying that and that there was a different rule for students or but it doesn't seem like that's what you're saying. You're basically saying at any of these other levels, students could, if they could afford it, could go there, and you'd probably have no less likelihood that someone might drink underage. It's really based on what they can afford to pay. And so when you have, that's why I just don't think it's fair to have different rules for different income level based experiences.
So, Ms. Brown, did you want to?
Certainly. Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I don't think it's only about the income level. That's not really what we are trying to address in this position. What we are trying to address is really the difference between the pro sports experience, where everybody buys a ticket and has equal access to the experience, and the collegiate experience, which traditionally has been one that has been focused around the students, in which we are trying to make it so, to trying to make an experience that is on our campus, that is respectful of our neighborhoods and communities. And as time has passed in the collegiate experience, there has been, as the individual from the deck described, there has been some other opportunities that have been created. And we don't want to put our heads in the sand and ignore those, but by the same token, what we really want to have is the collegiate experience.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, but if you really were wanting to distinguish between collegiate games versus pro games, then you could certainly, under Senator Tomasoni's bill, decide not to sell alcohol. But what you're really distinguishing in is the collegiate or the college student or alumni or whatever who can afford to pay more for the privilege of drinking alcohol versus those who can't afford to pay that extra amount for the privilege of drinking alcohol. I guess that's how I'm viewing it.
Madam
Brown,
Chair, and then we'll
Senator Olson,
seat here.
Thank you for your comments. What we are really advocating is that this is a decision that should be left with the Board of Regents, and that it's a decision that the board is in the best position to make in determining what's the appropriate venues on its campus for entertaining, how they want the stadiums to work. So what we're really advocating is that it is appropriate to leave it to the Board of Regents.
Madam Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
This bill does not take it out of the hands of the Board of Regents. It still allows the Board of Regents to make the decision.
So, and that's true, and it would be all or none. I mean, I get that is how we interpret that. Is there anybody else that wants to speak to this bill? Senator Tomasoni, how do you feel about this one going by itself?
Well, I'd rather have it go in the liquor bill.
I got myself into this one.
What about
Senator Tomasoni. As also, I can refer all calls to you, right?
Yes, you can.
No, whatever the committee wants to.
Madam Chair, I'd move the bill that be included in the omnibus liquor bill.
Okay. Senator Scogin's motion. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
The motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Member.
The conversation will continue, I know. let's see. Yes.
Ready for a drink of wine?
Is Senator Koch here? Oh, there she is, Senator Koch.
Yeah, I think I did.
I'm sorry, I didn't see you. I just asked if you were here. Members, we have about 45 minutes.
Okay.
And we have one, two.
Keep it going.
We have four bills. Two are pretty short, and two could be have a little longer conversation. Senator Koch, welcome to our committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. A little surprised to be here on Liquor and Tattoo Day, but still, nonetheless. Today I've got Senate File 390, and what this is an artisan distillery bill. This is a new type of business that would come to Minnesota, but not new to the country. There's 38, depending on the statistics, but there's 38 to 41 states that already allow artisan distilleries. The bill, I'll just quickly go through it. It would allow for a total quantity not to exceed 25,000 gallons in a year. It would require that not less than 50% of the distilled spirits be made of Minnesota-grown products. And it would allow for a very limited on-sale face-to-face an on-premise face-to-face off-sale of, it's one liter as it is. And Madam Chair, there's just we had talked with the Department of Public Safety, and I hadn't had this amendment drafted, but if you notice on line 1.22, this is talking about the brand registration, and it says in this that it must be registered with the commissioner without fee prior to sale, and I would be open to an amendment that would remove without fee. The fee is only $40, would help out public safety.
Senator Johnson would move you to take that language out. It kind of is an author's amendment to get the bill the way you'd rather have it. On line 1.22, just delete without fee, comma.
Thank you.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, because what I know about artisan distilleries would fit in one of those little wild turkey bottles on the airplane, I am going to turn it over to my experts, Rob Erdsted from Montrose, Minnesota, who originally brought the idea to my attention, and also Ross Plested. Pletzer. Ross Pletzer from the Red Wing area, who just saw the bill and came along. So,
well, welcome, gentlemen. Mr. Erdsted?
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I'll take a moment here to explain what artisan distilling is. It's often referred to as craft distilling or micro distilling. As the senator said, it's a growing industry in the United States. In 2000, there was 30 these small craft style distilleries. Now there's over 120 craft distilleries in the country. They're small distilleries, generally produce less than 25 or maybe up to 50,000 gallons of finished product each year. They're usually individual or family run, and they produce high quality, high end items, anything. It can be vodka, whiskey, rum, you name it. They've sprung up in pretty diverse states. It's Oregon, Nebraska, Kentucky, Wisconsin, West Virginia, Vermont are just some examples of the states that have allowed these. This bill would address this issue in two ways. It would, first of all, lower the annual fee. It isn't necessarily that Minnesota doesn't allow these, but it does. There's a $30,000 fee for any distillery that wants to exist in this state. It's far out of whack with the rest of the country and the region. Wisconsin, for instance, charges $500 per year. Iowa charges $300 per year. An operation like I want to open up a small artisan distillery in South Dakota would cost $100 per year. So,
and Minnesota, it would cost?
$30,000.
Madam Chair, my understanding is that they would have to have a manufacturing license, which is why it would be the $30,000.
Thank you, Senator. Yeah, and I one of the reasons that I approached the senator with this, when I first got the idea for this bill, there's a gentleman who now operates in New Richmond, Wisconsin. He makes a spirit called 45th Parallel Vodka. And he's established a distillery over there. He's doing very well. He's gained world acclaim. He's gone from the Minnesota and Wisconsin markets. Now he's in California and Illinois. And he's got, from word of mouth, 4 to 5 employees on his payroll already. It's a fairly new venture. The reason I mention him to you is because he's originally from northeast Minneapolis, and he wanted to start his business in Minnesota. I visited him, and he said that to me personally. And rather than fighting his fee, he just decided to jump the border and pay the $500 annually. Second way that this bill would help out this industry would be to allow very, very limited on-sale or on-site sales of the product. It'd be strictly limited in quantity, and the samples would be to amount to no more than 2 fluid ounces per person per day. Generally, probably, and it doesn't. I don't think the bill specifies the quantity in which they can be served. They'd probably be served in 1/2 ounce samples.
Not more than 2.
Not more than 2 ounces per day. Yeah.
But Mr. Erstedt, I when I was reading the bill earlier, it kind of almost implies that you could sell not more than 2 ounces. But then I think the lines 19 and 20, I mean, it does say may sell at on sale or provide without charge for consumption not more than 2 ounces. So I'm guessing that not more than 2 ounces actually goes with the provide without charge. But I think it's somewhat ambiguous as to
would that allow me to charge for the samples potentially if I chose to, or I guess that's the way I interpreted that.
Because, Madam Chair, further down, of course, then it talks about an artisan distillery may sell at off sale in a face-to-face transaction not more than 1 liter.
And Senator Koch, I that's what led me to think that maybe the first sentence was a little ambiguous. I don't know if Mr. Stang has an idea, but you see what I'm okay. I think you
Madam
could
Chair,
read it.
I see the issue, and I think you're right, and I think I could work up something to fix it.
I just so that you could sell more than 2 ounces. It just I don't think that's what it means to say, but it looks to me like that's what it does say. So,
thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
So that you would be able to sell then an off sale, not more than 1 liter.
1 liter per person per day. Yes, and the reason for that is at least for the. For people who come to visit, you know, there'd be a tourism aspect to this industry. Generally, there is. People are interested in, you know, beer making, wine making, and they would be interested in distillery as well. And when you get them on the premises, that's the time that you have to sell these products. You know, you can develop, you know, you can, by doing that, you sell them a bottle. Very often people will buy a bottle of booze and it sits in their cabinet for months, and then you establish a connection with the person who came in and bought that. You send them recipes every once in a while. You send them a recipe for a mint julep at Kentucky Derby time. You send them a recipe for eggnog at Christmas time. But you develop a little bit of brand loyalty by doing that. Otherwise, you could eliminate the on-sale sites, or pardon me, the on-site sale. But what you do by doing that, I would say, is it doesn't disallow me from opening up a distillery, but it does kind of severely harm the tourism aspect of it, because if I'm operating a distillery, I don't think I would be inclined to hire somebody to run tours and to manage a tasting room if I wasn't allowed to sell samples, because naturally, no matter how good of a feeling they have going away, many of them aren't going to be from the area. They won't have a place to buy it when they get back to where they're from. And also, it's just human nature. You know, even if they feel very good about the product, they forget about it, or you just don't get around to it, or they go back to what they're loyal to. You know, they look back on the experience as being a good thing, but also I'd say so anyway, I guess my point being that would almost eliminate the tourism aspect of this business if that were to happen. Jumping back up, and I'm sorry I didn't mention this earlier, the fee that's put in the bill here is to drop it down to $250. I just want to mention that's not out of whack at all with what's going on in other states. And in the last 5 years, there's been 5 states that I know of that have specifically addressed micro distilling. There are Washington, Oregon, South Dakota, Michigan, and Montana. All those states have dropped it to $100. Michigan, in fact, had a $1,000 fee, and they dropped theirs to $100. I don't know what, you know, what the fee would be proposed to be if it were to change at all. But anyway, I just want to mention that $250 is not out of whack, at least in comparison to what other states are doing. Say the state, it's Minnesota's a pretty natural fit for this legislation as well, just because the wisdom of previous legislatures has allowed wineries and microbreweries to exist in the state. So it's kind of created a culture where a business like this can thrive, since fermentation is a necessary part of distillation. It would be a natural outgrowth of that community. That's kind of what Michigan has done. I think Michigan is probably maybe the most comparable state to ours, agriculturally at least, and climate-wise. They have now 11 distilleries that have opened up, and that's been an outgrowth of their wine industry. And the secondly, I'd say that our agricultural diversity makes us a natural fit for this as well. It's kind of a hallmark of the artisan distilling industry. It's been the creation of singular products made from unique local products, from unique local commodities. There's things like pawpaw liqueur made in Indiana. There's vodka made from Vermont maple syrup. So you can imagine things like Honeycrisp cognac, wild rice vodka, sugar beet rum. There are crazier things that exist. You really, yeah. And there's a person in Vermont that makes vodka out of the sugars that are in milk, which doesn't sound very good, milk vodka, but it comes out clear and it tastes very good.
Madam Chair, I have a bottle Senator of Skogan. Moose Drool beer.
Pardon me?
I have a bottle of Moose Drool beer.
I guess
that kind of lays out what the industry is about. Again, there is some tourism benefit to this. Michigan, for instance, has a distillery trail where it's long and it runs through both rural and some city areas, but it has a significant tourist draw. So there's buses that run there. People use designated drivers, and they'll go to several distilleries. Portland's kind of the epicenter of the movement, and they have an actual heavily visited area in their city known as Distillery Row. So there's an agricultural benefit to it, both for showcasing the products, for providing a new market, possibly some value added. There's a gentleman from Washington State University, when they passed their bill, that mentioned that how many potatoes go to waste, I think he said that there's 20% of the yield of potatoes ends up lying in the field and going to waste. I'm relying on what he said here, but he said, and they're looking to make a distillery in Western Washington, or pardon me, Eastern Washington, that capitalizes on that as a pure value-added commodity or pure value-added aspect of this industry. I do want to address just a couple of concerns that people have been raised to me. This bill will not legalize any illicit operations that are currently in existence. Anyone who is distilling alcohol illegally or chooses to distill alcohol illegally is not made legal by this bill. There's not going to be any bathtub gin or two-buck chuck being made.
Well, two-buck chuck isn't so bad. I think it's three now.
Is it three-buck chuck now?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's perfectly legal, but yeah.
It's a very heavily involved industry from the entrepreneurs, and it's a minimum of $500,000 with the equipment to get into this. So images of stills blowing up and moonshiners and that sort of thing.
Mr. Erstad, do we currently allow anybody? You can make beer in your home, you can make wine. Can you make a distilled spirit?
No,
not at all.
Not at all. Not a drop. I believe that's federal law, actually. I don't think anybody in the country can without it.
So we need to move along here. I think you've made a really good case. And I presented something earlier having to do with craft breweries, and it is something that is starting to take off. It's really taken off in a lot of other states, and it's taken off in Minnesota in terms of the breweries. But they kind of run into the ceiling. And there's a lot to be worked out with the three-tier system and with folks and, the cost of getting into the business of being a manufacturer. I don't know how many manufacturers we have in Minnesota. Do you know that?
I don't know for certain. I think two. Two that we know of, Ross? Okay.
Two. So, and I have no idea what kind of gallonage they do, but I see Ms. Schelsberg back there, so she probably could tell us that. Mr. Pletzer, did you want to speak to this, too? Just
briefly, Madam Chairman, the only thing I would say, one of the flashpoints has been on the three-tier system. This is another encroachment on the three-tier system. And in a survey of states that have passed legislation in the last 4 or 5 years, and it should be on the first page of the handout that you have there, Of the 12 states that have passed it, only New York has not allowed on-site sale for off-premises use. Some you can sell your whole 60,000 gallons. Some, if they allow 5,000, you can sell the whole thing. Maine says that you can sell, or New Hampshire, you can sell one 9-liter case per sale, no more than 12 9-liter cases per year. These are in control states and three-tier states. No one has seen a problem with the Granholm case or with a breakdown, a slippery slope on the three-tier system. So Minnesota got into the craft brewing, the microbrewing brewing area late. It's still time to get in here. It's talking about, we really, same thing you were talking about, jobs, agricultural products, because 50% has to come from Minnesota. And that's soybeans, sugar beets, corn, oats, even apples. And I think that the trend, there are bills, there's a bill currently in front of the Iowa legislature, no problem with on-sale site for off-sale use. So I really think we're looking at an industry here. I know some people who would like to invest in these kind of things, but they're not going to invest with a $30,000 buy-in and an uncertain market about how you can get at least word of mouth going on the product. Same with the breweries you were talking about.
And members, I haven't had a chance to go over the packet except just now. I hadn't seen it. I'm sorry that I didn't notice it. I think members probably, I draw it to your attention to look at this.
And Madam Chair, we recognize there are concerns. We want to be able to work. We're really not wanting to, you know, tear apart the three-tier system with this. We're not any, you know, that's not any interest in that we may need some, you know, more time to work with this, but we really appreciate just being able to have this discussion, to get this out there. I knew nothing about Artisan. I didn't know it existed.
Well, Senator Koch, I really didn't either. So okay. I'm just learning about craft beer. So is there anybody here that wanted to speak to this? Anybody that...
Oh, yeah, here comes Banks.
Mr. Bagnoli.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Joe Bagnoli with the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association. I guess, and the former testifier alluded to it a little bit, this is a, to the degree that this allows on sale or on site off sale purchases, it'll essentially, and it's not a little a quantity, it's a liter of vodka, and a person could come in every day and buy a liter of vodka. That person would be buying the liter of vodka from this place, as opposed to what we would hope is that they would wholesale it to a liquor store, and the person would be then buying it from the liquor store. So that would be our concern, that if you set one of these up, it's our concern in any of these situations where, and you talked a little bit about the craft brewery, that if craft breweries or any manufacturer of alcohol gets into the position where they are the distributor at the retail level of the alcohol, they have a distinct advantage over everyone else, and it detracts from sales.
As opposed to going through the wholesale system.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it detracts from sales and has a potentially detrimental effect on any liquor store or on-sale establishment in their community. So that would be our concerns. Our concern is a leader. I understand the tourism aspect of it. I guess the other thing I would suggest is it just, I've sort of looked at this and thought it's $25,000. It does still continue to allow for $250 the person who wants to make 500. And I don't know, it doesn't, I'm sure the kind that these folks are talking about, these folks are high-end, this is real specialty stuff that they're talking about, but it doesn't require you to make specialty stuff. For $250 with this license, you could make a couple hundred gallons and sell it to your family with, I mean, I don't know how to make this stuff, but it doesn't sound like it's that hard if you have a little bit of machinery. So my concern is that perhaps there ought to be a minimum, if you're planning on going forward, that you have to produce at least this much so that you get serious people involved in it and you don't get the...
You don't want a still in everybody's garage.
Well, I don't know. I mean...
Yeah. No, I don't think I do. But
those are the concerns that we have. I mean, this is a little bit of different product than beer and wine, you're talking about alcohol concentrations and that are very high, and you're talking about stuff that, if done in the right way, at least historically, have led to explosions and things. So,
you know, Senator Koch, I don't know if this can be worked out this session.
And understandable.
But and you, in any case, you would have to go to finance with this. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we need to do some work about it. I don't think it should. Personally, I don't think it should cost $30,000 for somebody to do a craft distillery. But I don't know what the magic number is, and I don't know what would be involved in the regulation.
And Madam Chair,
what do you want to do?
Well, Madam Chair, I know that it sounds like next session you are going to be having a bigger discussion, as you talked about
the craft breweries, Senator.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so what I might suggest is that we would just like to be perhaps included in those discussions, and we can keep working on the language. We're very open to working with anyone, with beverage or with wholesalers, with any concerns. We're happy
and
to
they
work
do,
with
there
them.
Are a lot of concerns, but that doesn't mean it's not something we can't do at some point.
Thank
Senator
you.
Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of my big concerns is just that it seems to leave local governments out of the process, where normally they would be involved in looking at, you know, off-sale licenses or on-off-sale licenses and how many they want to have in an area. And this seems to be a direct directive that the state's giving that's taking them out of a loop that they're traditionally in. So if we were going to look at this in the future, I'd at least want there to be something that it would be where it would be subject to local governments also having something to say about these licensing being issued.
You know, Senator Olson, I was sitting here thinking that maybe since – and I understand the tourism piece, and I know a number of other states are making the most of that with their wineries, and now you're telling me, you know, their distilleries as well. Maybe we could do only on Sunday.
Senator Chair, we're not
it's another. You
not
don't want to go there
today,
either.
Madam
I'm sorry,
Chair.
Senator Koch. But it was just a thought. Mr. Pletzer, did you – and Senator Johnson, you have something.
Madam Chair, along with what you did earlier, maybe next year we can have a omnibus craft
– An omnibus craft bill.
License, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes. I would also
Mr. Erstead.
Oh, pardon, yeah.
That's fine.
Pardon me, Madam Chair. In light of what was just said, I don't want that to be the parting memory that people have as distills in people's garages exploding.
Right.
Because there's federal inspections that have to be undertaken. I assume the state is not going to license somebody who has a still in their garage.
That's right. And, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to imply that.
It was previously. And I heard the word explosions, and I heard it's still in people's garage, and I just I didn't want that to be the image the people
it
left.
It sounds
with.
Like there'd be a considerable capital outlay on your part.
Tremendous.
To go into
surety bonds, Madam Chair, insurance liability.
Mr. Pletzer, do you have one last word here?
Yes, I was just going to add that the minimum investment normally is about $500,000 to get into this business if you're going to be serious. And we did have a draft bill that the Department of Public Safety thought was a little too broad, and one of the provisions in there was that if you sold on site, it would have to be comparable, kind of like they do with gasoline, comparable to the price that we'd be charged at retail stores in the neighboring area. The intent is not to undersell retail outlets. The intent is to get it into retail outlets, and one way to do that is to get a distributor interested because they see that your product is moving with on-site sales. The intent is not to turn a manufacturer – they don't have time to sell on-site their whole product. They want to get it into the stores. And one way to do that – and the fella has done that with the 45th Parallel Vodka in Wisconsin – is
creating a demand.
You create the demand, and you get the buzz going, and then people want to put it on the shelves. And the 45th Parallel Vodka just came recently to a liquor store near me. So,
so Senator Koch, should we lay this aside if that's all right with you,
Madam Chair?
I mean, I don't know how members feel. We're feeling pretty perky today. You know, move this along, but I think I know it needs work, and I know there are people who have legitimate concerns. But I think some members in this committee are interested in the promotion of, you know, creating an industry and helping one get going in our state. So,
well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks to everyone who, you know, voiced some concerns, and we'll continue to work
thank
on it.
Thank you for bringing it forward, Senator Koch. Mr. Erstead, that was really enlightening, and I'm going to read all of this. And Mr. Pletzer, thank you for sharing your knowledge with us as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You.
Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you. Then, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Members, we have three bills, and Senator Ingebrigtsen's going to take a little bit.
Senator, I don't think so. I think we're going to move right through this.
We have some testifiers here.
Yes, we do. And I've been, when they're here signing it, if I might indulge you a little bit, Madam Chair, give you a little. One would think that, you know, coming from law enforcement, I have a lot to do with the folks that participate in spirits. But you're right. I did have a lot to do with that. But let me back up a little bit to 1962 when my dad was elected sheriff in Kitson County. We were living in the jail at that time. Those of you who have been old enough to know that the sheriff would live in the jail with his family and the wife would cook for the prisoners. My first experience with going back into the cell block area, there was two cell blocks behind this big locked door. One off to the left was for the prisoners, and one off to the right had a lock on it, couldn't go in there. Finally, my dad opened the door and let me in there. It was full of stills. So I come from a long history but it was just interesting. I just remember that whole room was just full of stills. That was back from the Prohibition day. But anyhow, right. Those things were sold. But anyhow, thank you, Madam Chair and members, for allowing me to be here today with Senate File 604. Yes, I think it may take some time. It may be a little bit confusing. But with me today, I have a couple testifiers, and I'll have them identify themselves. But I also have a couple of amendments that I would like to introduce. I'm not sure exactly how you'd like that done, if you'd like that before, as we move along, or would you like them both right away?
Okay, no, we would do that up front. Senator Gerlach would offer the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape Senator Ingebrigtsen would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. And the A2 amendment, and I think you probably need that as well.
Yes,
too,
I do, Madam Chair.
Because you're deleting, I see, reinstating some stricken language in two places and then also deleting Section 3.
Yes.
I think we can kind of handle this as one to get this in the shape you want. Senator Gerlach would move the A2 amendment. Discussion, members. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. Now the bill is where you'd like it to be.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At least I hope it is. There may be also a verbal amendment, but we can get to that in just a second. If we want to refer to the A1 amendment, that takes in pages, as you can see, page 3, line 19.
So that's, okay, almost.
It's quite extensive, actually, so if the group would want to take the time to look at that, and if there's any questions, we can certainly answer those questions. We'll delete all of line 19, which is Section 3, and add this as a new section.
And Senator Ingebrigtsen, does that put it in line with what we allow now for tastings, or pretty much?
You know, maybe I'm going to have to ask.
Page 2 has something on that, so go ahead.
I think I may have to defer to one of my testifiers who really knows an awful lot about it. The folks that are in the industry, the practitioners, are here. And I think if you have any questions, they can answer that. State your full name. And
good morning or good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Leon Ullman. My wife and I are the owners and operators of Goose Lake Farm and Winery up in Nowthen, Minnesota, which is in northwest Anoka County. I can address the question in regards to the changes in, I'm sorry, the amendment. It is somewhat consistent with the way that the bill reads now. I'm sorry, the statute reads now. The statute currently allows wine tastings for nonprofit entities off-site. What this would do is this would afford us the possibility of promoting our Minnesota products to a wider, broader audience. For example, your local jewelry store would like to do an on-site wine tasting and an appreciation. Our requirements, myself and my wife at Goose Lake Farm and Winery, would require that whoever would like to do a business entity wine tasting would actually have to get a municipal temporary license for that tasting. And with this change in the statute, we would be able to do that for them to promote the Minnesota products.
So, Mr. Olam, are you saying you would have a license, or this would keep you from having to have one?
This would allow us to do it. As the statute currently reads, we are not allowed to do off-site tastings for any entity other than a nonprofit organization. We would require that the business that would like us to conduct the wine tasting would have to go to the local municipality and get an event license. I hope that answered your question.
Mr. Olam, thank you.
Okay, Madam Chair, as we move forward, of course, we really want to emphasize the Minnesota winery, the thing that we're dealing about here. I'm not sure exactly how many wineries. I think we heard different numbers. It might be 26 wineries in Minnesota. Does that sound correct?
26 to 32.
32.
Yes.
Okay, Madam Chair, any other questions on the A1 amendment? I can move on to the A2.
Go ahead.
The A2 amendment, of course, is on page 2.
Reinstating 6 and 7.
That's correct.
And 24 and 25, 23 to 25.
Yes.
And
quite extensive, actually, section 4 there, is taking out the distillery spirits section of it, as well as up on lines 2.6 through 2.7.
Right.
Again, once again, referring to distilled spirits. And the only other change, of course, you can see on line, not referring to the amended, is 2.3, of course, going to a 10 o'clock a.m. versus a 12 noon ability to serve wine. And of course, that always leaves them the ability to make that decision. They don't necessarily have to do 10. It just gives them the option.
Okay. And you have someone else to
left, right?
to testify here?
Yes, go ahead. John Maloney from Cannon River Winery is here today.
Good to see you again, Mr. Maloney.
Good to see you too, Madam Chair. Yes, my name is John Maloney, and my wife and I own the Cannon River Winery down in Cannon Falls, Minnesota. And we opened up our winery in the fall of 2004, and we have a 20-acre vineyard just outside of town, and we grow over 10,000 vines now that are in production. So our vineyard is growing every year. The ability to do off-site tastings is really what I'm here to help answer questions for, but that's a really important part of this bill for us. My wife and I constantly get asked to do off-site tastings at private businesses, and I'll just draw you a good example of what happens here. There's a large greenhouse nursery operation in the community that we live in, and every fall they have an event called Girls Night Out, and it goes every Wednesday from the end of October till Christmas time, and they invite chocolatiers, they invite cheesemakers, they invite a coffee roaster, and we've been invited to do that event as well, just to be there for a couple of hours, offering samples of our wine, peddling our wares, so to speak, telling our story. And unfortunately, we've had to decline that, and that's just the kind of thing that our industry could really benefit by going out and telling our story. I mean, this wine industry in the state of Minnesota is really growing, and we've got some wonderful opportunities. The work that the University of Minnesota has done for cold hardy wine grapes is just short of phenomenal. I mean, what they've done with the apple industry in the last 75 years, you all know Honeycrisp and Harrelson, I'm sure. The same thing is going to happen with the grape industry. So they are internationally known for the work that they do on their cold hardy grapes. And here we are in Minnesota in the wine industry producing wines from Minnesota grapes. They've got to be cold hardy wine grapes for this to work for us. So we're using those kinds of grapes in our wines. And it's a great story, and I'm constantly frustrated because we're doing a lot of tastings and events that are permitted things. For example, the Minneapolis Food and Wine Show just occurred back in February, the end of February, and we've been doing that since 2005. the first winter that we were open, we had a few wines that we could pour and sample. And I'm telling you, 8 out of 10 people this year still had never heard of us before. So we really are looking for ways to go out and educate the public and, you know, tell our story. It's a great story. So
no, it is. And it's serious wine. You know, I mean,
World class.
Yep, it is. And the university has done some incredible things. Now, do you have to tip the vines or do anything with them, or do they?
We do not. These are all cold, hardy varieties, so they can withstand our winters for the most part. We did have a little bit of a test back in January. We're going to see how things look.
Okay.
But this is our dormant pruning season, and so far our vines came through the winter very well. But
that was going to be my next question. How did they come through this? Yeah. Okay. Members have any questions? Is there anybody else that would like to speak to this? Mr. Falconer, I see you there.
Okay. Madam Chair, if I could.
Mr. Olin, thank you. And
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Still have that oral amendment I'd like to address, but we have to accept the first two amendments, and they have been already.
Yes, they have.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yes. What was the, and I think we have something to hand out, B, if you would.
Okay.
All right.
There he comes with it. Oh, it's on the
table. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Welcome.
Yeah, I am John Falconer, Falconer Vineyards Winery and Nursery in Red Wing, Minnesota. And being passed out is a background study on our industry. It was completed by the Department of Applied Economics and the Agricultural Department with data as of 2007.
University of Minnesota.
Correct, yes. And so for members who aren't familiar with the industry, it shows you the economic impact that we do have for the state. I'm here to discuss some of these changes to help us better market and educate the public. We want to change, as John spoke to, the idea of being able to taste in other locations. Many of the wineries are, as we say in Minnesota, in the sticks. And we're closed during the winter because the public doesn't want to drive in the back roads. This would allow us to have more of a year-round sales if we could take orders at a tasting. We can go home and fulfill those, call the people back. And we're not selling product at a tasting, but, call people back and see if they're still interested in them. We can ship it out to them. So it allows some winter sales for our industry to help the new young ones and, established wineries also.
And, Mr. Falconer, can you do that today? You could send me wine.
Yes, if you called up, we can ship to you, yes. You have to sign that you're 21, though. Okay. Another issue here is we would like to be able to open at 10 a.m. versus the current 12 noon. And we're part of the hospitality tourist business, especially those of us that are located in strict tourist towns. Buyers' habits have been to get up in the morning, have breakfast, and head out on Sunday morning, head home. And they often stop by our winery, and, of course, we can't sell to them, and they're not about to wait 2 hours. So I had another business in Red Wing Stoneware Company, manufacturing plant. And between 10 a.m. and 11:30, we would add another $400 or $500 worth of sales in a day. And so it is a real important change to help our industry out. And also, most people aren't going to be drinking on Sunday anyway. They've visited us on Saturday, and they've had some tasting, and now they're buying something to take home or to give their brother or to have as a gift for somebody. And that tends to be the, what Sunday sales end up as. I already passed out the economic impact study, and I'd also like to remind everyone here that the value of growing grapes made into wine in Minnesota. We provide about $2,500 in sales tax to the state per acre of grapes, far exceeding most other other crops, which don't even have tax when they're made into other products.
Did you say sales tax? I'm sorry.
Yes, sales tax. And we also pay excise tax. So this is a very lucrative industry also for the state of Minnesota. With that, I'd like to thank you for listening to me, and I'm very happy to answer any further questions members may have.
Any questions from members? Mr. Bagnoli, did you wish to speak to this?
Yes,
oh, I don't know. Was there a Mr. Hedin as well? Oh, that's who that was. Okay, come on up here and feel free.
Madam Chair, yes, we have been working with the and met with him, the retailers, this afternoon, and had a good conversation with them, and that conversation certainly will continue. Go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And yes, welcome.
Committee members, my name is Mark Hedin. I'm with White Rabbit Vineyards and Winery in Andover, Minnesota. I'm a very small winery, and I was just licensed almost 2 years ago. I'm trying to grow my business, and we use over 95% of Minnesota-grown fruit and grapes in both our table wines and our sparkling wines. And I'm in complete support of the bills and amendments as presented by Senator Ingebrigtsen. So thank you.
I appreciate your coming. And how is it going? Did you get through the winter?
We doubled sales each of the last 2 years, and it's going great.
You're kind of in my neck of the woods. I'm in Brooklyn Park, so I'm not
just north
far.
Of you, yes.
Okay. Where?
Andover, 161st and Round Lake Boulevard.
Okay.
And in a couple blocks.
Okay. Mr. Hedin, thank you. Mr. Bagnoli, did you want to?
And Madam Chair, I have another testifier from
Carlos Creek. We need to kind of move here.
Yeah, we'll do that. Carlos Creek Winery.
Hello, welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing us to be here today. I also am in support of what's going on, what's being presented here today. Our winery has been around since 1999, but we're new owners.
Can you say your name and spell the last name for us?
Tammy Bredesen, Bredesen.
Thank you.
In Alexandria. We also are very much in a tourism area, so to the 10 o'clock opening time, we definitely see that. There's a large exodus from the many lakes in our area that begins early on Sunday morning, and grabbing some of that traffic would be very beneficial to us. We're on the other side of the wineries in terms of size from Mark Dean, who is here, and yet still very small on a national scale. So all of these efforts to help us promote our products and get the word out about Minnesota grapes and fruits is very much appreciated. So,
okay, thank you very much. Did you want to do a verbal amendment, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes,
what were you looking for?
Basically, it's an addition onto the A1 amendment, and legal can help me with this. But in the interest of recognizing Minnesota farm wineries and pertaining to fine wineries only, we'd like to add on the end or at the beginning, whatever he prefers.
You're looking at the A1 language.
That's correct. Yeah, and it would be after the ounces or actually before a wine on line 1-2 or I guess line 1-6, conducted by the words conducted by a Minnesota farm winery licensed under Minnesota statutes 340.A as in Adam 315. And I think possibly at the end of that sentence, maybe only, and that would be very specific to Minnesota.
And I'm looking at the A1 amendment. I'm trying to...
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Stang.
I wonder if that language might not fit more properly, just looking at the bill itself, on line 3. Is the idea that these wine tastings conducted on the premises of the private business entity are conducted by the farm winery? Is that the...
Yes, I believe that's it.
Okay.
Yes.
Then I think the best place for this language would be on page 3, line 19, after private business entity would be... It would read, located on the premises of a private business entity and conducted by a Minnesota farm winery licensed under section 348.315, period. And then we pick up with the A1 amendment language. It's already modified that section. I think that probably works a little better.
That would be fine.
Senator Sparks, would you offer that amendment? on the Sparks Amendment. Do members understand what we're doing here? I understand the purpose. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. The motion prevails. Okay. Mr. Bagnoli.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli on behalf of the MLBA and Municipal Beverage Association. Earlier today, I met with Senator Ingebretson and essentially said, what are you trying to do here? This doesn't seem to have anything to do with farm wineries. The top part of the bill has a lot to do with farm wineries. This has to do with tastings and orders being taken and private residents, and essentially seems to want to turn every private residence or private business into a sort of a temporary liquor store that you could take orders at. And as you can imagine, we would oppose that. I now have learned at the time, I think Senator Ingebretson hasn't had, you know, all his years in law enforcement, hasn't had all that. And up here, we weren't exactly sure what was trying to be, but we've now learned in the last couple of hours what we're trying to do here. And I'd say a couple things. One, as a general matter, both MLBA and Municipal Beverage Association supports and to the all extent possible supports what the farm winery folks have done. In fact, we've had regional meetings at some farm wineries, including, I know, Carlos Creek. I think there's new owners, but and others that aren't here today. And we're looking for ways to support them in all the ways we can. I think that what they've done goes a long way towards helping. I'm not sure, and I'm just, this is more of just a reluctance because I'm uncertain, somewhat because I'm a little bit under the weather and have had to look at it only rather quickly, whether or not this completely works. I still am nervous about orders being taken at private businesses. I understand what they're trying to do, but I'm just not sure what else I'm opening the door on here.
Now, Mr. Bagnoli, I thought I understood that I could order a case of wine from one of our farmers.
I think I didn't mean to. I just checked with someone who knew this. I think that may be inaccurate. I don't know if you're allowed to order. And I'm looking at counsel for some help on this. I think that may be inaccurate that you're not allowed to order a case of wine directly from the winery. But
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you can.
Then we're
so.
Thank you. Thank you for the enlightenment.
No, and Mr. Bagnoli, I know you.
Yeah, I think I had in my head that it was two cases, but I wasn't sure.
Well, no, Mr. Bagnoli, I said only one because I'm a moderate person.
Of course.
Because I could get up to two, I think.
Indeed.
So that's why I think I could get up to two. But and I know you've not been feeling real well for a few days here this week.
That's here nor there. I don't want to – I'm appreciative of where they're going. We're trying. I've had some nice conversations. I want to just express to the committee and to them that we're sympathetic. I just don't know. I am – very anxious about opening up order taking at other private businesses for alcohol, which other private businesses range in everything from grocery stores to hardware stores to Gerton's
and that's on
the flower
page 3,
shows.
Line 7.
And that makes me anxious. That said, I don't exactly know how to proceed, but I'm giving you my anxiety.
I understand that, Mr. Bagnoli. I have a feeling that this might actually fall under that language that I had about advertising. I mean, I think you could probably place an order if you saw somebody, pardon me, but at the grocery store. I mean, or wherever you saw them, you could tell them you'd like
Senator.
To order a case of wine.
Senator. God forbid.
You could tell them. I don't mean that they're setting up shop and I'm buying it from them, but
I understand. And also, I guess, Madam Chair, and I would ask Senate Counsel. I've read this a variety of times. This seems to only apply to me if you are a charitable, and I'm not sure if this actually gets at what the advocates want here. Only for charitable, religious, or other nonprofit organizations at the top of subdivision two, I've sort of pulled the pages apart and folded them down, and then it uses the word organization again throughout this language, but the organization that they seem to be referring to is a charitable or nonprofit. So I think you'd have to be a charitable or nonprofit to have a wine tasting at a private business, which I'm not sure gets at what they want. I still don't know whether I like it or not, but...
Yeah, Ms. Bagnoli, I think that's a point. I see that might be somewhat confusing because the opening paragraph of that subdivision talks about, I mean, it starts out with charitable, religious, or other nonprofit, and then we kind of follow still in subdivision two down to F, and in the middle there we kind of throw in located on the premises of a private business entity. I don't know, Senator Ingebretson, Mr. Maloney, or someone who knows if you still intend this to be a nonprofit or charitable organization having the event, or if it is, as they said, like the jewelry store having a wine tasting, that's the question. And I think it needs to be worked out. Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, sorry, before I had to step out too, I was going to make a point going back to the first page. On line 1.14, the language that said this requirement does not apply to Minnesota farm wineries is kind of inserted in the middle of that paragraph. And so when you do that, it makes it seem like, from an English standpoint, I would say, that it's only intended to apply to the sentence immediately preceding it. And I don't think that's the intent. I think the intent is that this is supposed to apply to the whole paragraph, which means that it should either come at the beginning or the end. And I was thinking most appropriately would probably belong at the end after you talk about bonds must be in the amounts of, and then because you mean that the overall requirement, doesn't apply. And so I don't think that sentence should be in that location in that paragraph.
So, Senator Ingebretson, we need some work, and I think it's important. I mean, I'm really pleased personally that you brought this forward. I think it needs some work, and it certainly needs some discussion with Mr. Bagnoli's, organizations that he's representing. I mean, I think they have some legitimate concerns.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I personally would like to see us do whatever we can to help our winery businesses and to be encouraging to that industry to grow in Minnesota and to be able to appeal to tourists.
But I just, Madam Chair, if I could indulge you just one second to ask the testifier here to address his concerns, if I could.
Mr. Malone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Joe, I guess I just wanted to say a couple of things. First of all, we are talking about no alcohol changing hands. It's just orders taken. And in today's world, so many people are carrying Blackberries, for example, and they could do that ordering right there anyway. It's that sort of thing. So we're not talking about the actual product changing hands there.
Ms. Harrison pointed that out to me, that she could probably do this on her Blackberry or an iPhone or whatever. Mr. Bagnoli. Okay.
Madam Chair, and I don't necessarily disagree. I just don't.
Well, I'm going to ask the committee if you want to move this along. I think this would go by itself, Senator Ingebretson, because it needs more work than Senator Scheid put into it, between now and the floor.
Sure.
But I would certainly, try to work with you as well. And apparently it's going to need to go to
finance. Madam Chair, I think it needs to go to finance because there's a reduction in fee still in the bill.
And
the exemption from bonding may also require finance. So there's at least two provisions here which send it to finance.
And Senator Ingebretson, I'm very interested in seeing us make some progress here. And that would give you an opportunity to meet with interested parties and get this kind of in the shape, I think, and accomplish some good things.
That certainly would be fine with me when we get everybody back in good condition and shape here, and we'll have a meeting. Absolutely, we want this to move forward because you can see that there's folks here that are interested in this. So,
somebody, Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, I'll move Senate File 604 as amended.
Senator Dahl,
recommended to Finance.
Senator Dahl moves Senate File 604 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Stanton.
I'm sorry. Did you want to fix Senator Olson's problem in this committee? Not her problem, but the problem she identified with the bill.
We only have 7 minutes.
Okay, sorry.
I know.
Madam Chair, I really see none. I mean, I don't want to deal with that.
Do you want to do that? Do you have a simple one?
Yeah, it'd be very simple. Okay. I think you would.
Senator Olson's going. We're going to hold on to your motion there, Senator Dahl, and Senator Olson's going to move.
You make the current language paragraph A.
That's fine.
And you move the new language on non-applicability to a paragraph B, and you would say, this subdivision does not apply to Minnesota farm wineries.
I'm sure I'll
this subdivision?
Yes.
Just say this subdivision.
Yes.
Senator Olson moves that. Any discussion? Members, you understand. All those in favor say aye.
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 Same sign. Opposed? The motion prevails. And now on Senator Dahl's motion that 604 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to Committee on Finance. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. The motion prevails. Senator Ingebrigtsen, thank you.
Madam Chair and members, thank you very much.
Mr. Maloney, Mr. Faulkner, all these people that I know.
Thank you.
Good work, and I think, and Mr. Bagnoli, we'll just keep talking about it.
Thank you very
much.
We'll
make it work. Thank you. Senator Ingebrigtsen. Yeah, I think we're going to try Senator Sparks' bill really quickly. I'm sorry. Well, I was going to do his. Well, you want to
do them both?
I think you can do them both, Senator Sparks. Were you prepared to do Senator Metzen's?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, good. Okay. So which one do you want to do first?
Let's take Senate File 1318 first,
Madam
Chair.
That's the Sparks bill. Senator Sparks.
Madam Chair, I'll try to be brief. This bill was brought to me by the League of Minnesota Cities. It's a simple bill that clarifies that public facilities such as park shelter or a community center may allow non-commercial alcohol use. I know of no opposition to the bill. The Department of Public Safety is fine with it, and I have Ed Cadman here with me to answer any questions you may have.
Welcome to our committee. I'm sure you thought we were never going to get to you, right? I've seen you sitting back there.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
And it's Mr. Is it Cadman?
It is.
Okay. Welcome. Do you want to say something on behalf of the league, or
I'll just clarify. I'll do all I can to trivialize this, but emphasize the value of it to our members. This is something that just clarifies a practice that is already happening, and it would make a lot of cities very happy to know definitively what they can do.
That they've been following the law.
Correct.
Well, they will be in the future.
Right? Correct.
Okay. Senator Prettner-Solon.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Sparks, does this say that alcohol may be used in parks or community centers?
This will do
Mr.
nothing,
Cadman.
Madam Chair, members, this will do nothing to take away a city or a municipality's discretion to ban liquor completely.
But
in those spaces.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
That was going to be my next question, but it does say that it may be used.
Correct.
Okay.
Any questions? Is there anybody that wishes to speak against the bill? Then Senator Sparks moves that Senate File 1318 be recommended to be included in the omnibus bill. Is that
That's correct.
Appropriate? On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. Thank you, Mr. Cadman.
Madam Chair, then I guess I'm going to try to pinch hit for Senator Metzen, too, if that's okay with you on
yes,
Senate
absolutely.
File 1620. This bill, and Council can maybe help me with it, I think has to deal with the Metropolitan Airports Commission, its ability to extend some hours within the secured area. I did have a member. I don't know if he's still here from the Metropolitan. Stuff is still here. Maybe I'll see if he's out in the hallway that can speak more to it. And it looks like Mr. Bagnoli.
And Mr. Bagnoli knows the issue, too. You're still here.
Madam Chair. I've got some friend brought orange juice. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli, Grand Shea Law Firm, on behalf of the MAC. Mitch Killian is here on behalf.
Time it should be reversed. I read that.
Mr. Kiliak, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mitch Killian with the Metropolitan Airports Commission. I think you see the bill is pretty simple for us. Just to remind you, about 50% of our passengers that come through Minneapolis-St. Paul International are just connecting passengers. They don't know if they're in Detroit, Seattle, Cincinnati now, Atlanta. So they're just connecting and moving on. So they come from other countries, other states, other time zones. So they're just kind of passing through. This is just another tool for us to make MSP the airport of choice that they want to pass through.
So... Mr. Kiliak, you're suggesting somebody would buy a ticket just so they could take them through Minneapolis-St. Paul so they could have a beer with their steak at 6 in the morning.
Madam Chair, really they do come from all different time zones, and it is a continuous complaint for passengers that every morning we hear from the bartender saying, sorry, we can't serve you yet.
So, Mr. Kiliak, when Mr. Stang and I were looking at the bill, it looked like you probably wanted to reverse this and do this between 2 a.m. and 6, but
no,
you don't.
No.
You want to be able to
serve
at 6 a.m. and go until 2 a.m., which is your closing time.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Yeah, okay.
And the starting time now is 10?
10 on Sundays, 8 on weekdays, just as the state law is for other facilities.
Okay, so do members understand? And this would be... within the security areas.
So
people aren't just going to drive out to the airport to get a beer at 6 a.m. Gotcha. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Killian, if people come from all different time zones, why not just make it 24/7?
Mr. Kiliak.
Madam Chair and Senator Gerlach, I don't think we're opposed to that. We thought it might be more palatable, but really after 10 and 11 o'clock at night, the place is pretty shut down. There's not enough business to keep a bar open. In fact, we have a couple of leases that we require some food to be opened in a couple of our leases just for the overnight people that are really there all night. But for the most part, I don't think that our facilities even dictate that business, but it might be an easier way to do it.
So, well, I think... it might not. The businesses themselves may not really want to have that pressure on them either. You know, if they're, I don't know.
Madam Chair and members, if we saw the need, I think we could come back and say maybe we need to look at that. But right now, it's the early morning hours.
Members, are there any questions? Then Senator Sparks moves that Senate File 1620. Be recommended to be included in the omnibus liquor bill. Is there anybody here that's opposed to this? Okay, on that motion, no questions. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. And now I'm going to move Senate File 1313 as amended.
With all the bills,
incorporated.
Big thick one.
As the omnibus bill. Now, Senator Ingebrigtsen's is on its own, and Senator Koch's is laid over, and obviously my own one having to do with craft breweries is laid over. But everything else is in here. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Pretner-Solon. And we are meeting tonight. We are recessing right now, and we'll be back here at 6. And we will... We will move. We have a Senator Scogin bill, a Senator Gerlach bill, and a Senator Pretner-Solon. Okay. Thank you, members. We're in recess. Mr. Bagnoli.
Madam Chair, thank you.
You're an ex officio member here.